Hello, and welcome to Glass Lewis Proxy Season Preview Proxy Talk, podcast edition. Before we get started, I need to remind everyone that this recording should not be considered a solicitation of proxies by Glass Lewis. Glass Lewis has not sought permission to do so from the SEC, nor will it. This recording is for information purposes only and should not be construed as providing investment advice. In addition, Glass Lewis makes no representation regarding the accuracy, completeness, or reliability of any statement of any of our speakers in this recording. If you have any questions, please contact us via our website, www.glasslewis.com. I'm Andrew Geblin, Director of European and Latin American Research at Glass Lewis, and I am joined by two of my colleagues here who work on Latin American research.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Francisca Vicente, and like Andrew said, I'm an analyst for the Latin American market.
Hi, I'm Eva Valles, and I'm also an analyst for the Latin American market.
And we're here today to talk about the upcoming Brazilian proxy season in 2017. There's actually a lot going on in Brazil right now with regard to corporate governance. And that's partially because of the political climate, where corporate governance has become a key issue of focus as a result of a few scandals and problems, we could say, which even recently resulted in the impeachment of the Brazilian president. So it's rare that we see corporate governance scandals kind of going that high up the chain. But as you can imagine, as a result, this is a very important issue to talk about in Brazil right now. We should also be aware of the context that institutional investors play in the Brazilian market. Historically, they haven't been so engaged with Brazilian companies, apart from those investors who are in Brazil, I should say. More foreign institutional investors are now getting involved, especially in board elections, as more representatives proposed by minority shareholders have been made available for a vote. And we'll talk a little bit more about specifically how that's happening later. But this is definitely creating room for more participation by institutional shareholders. And of course, we're still monitoring the fallout from those scandals, which mostly center around Petrobras, the Brazilian oil company, and all of the related companies that have been caught up in this bribery scandal, with losses piling up around the world, and also coming back to this one company. So just to talk a little bit about the role of institutional investors, and particularly as it relates to how boards are formed. Fran, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about why institutional investors, particularly foreign institutional investors, have struggled so much to exercise their rights when it comes to the composition of boards.
Well, I think I'll start out by pointing out that the fact that there are different types of board election procedures that can be combined into the same meeting often increases investor struggles and also misunderstandings in exercising their respective rights. So let me just very briefly outline these election procedures. Firstly, we have slate elections, meaning that all slate candidates will or won't be appointed to the board together, which results oftentimes in reduced individual accountability. In most cases in Brazil, directors will be elected through slate elections. We then have cumulative voting, which allows shareholders to concentrate their votes on a single candidate or split his/her votes between all candidates. Given the late nature of cumulative voting requests, since petitions can be made up to 48 hours before the meeting date, it's highly unlikely that shareholders, specifically foreign, will know in due time whether multiple voting has or hasn't been requested. Finally, there can be separate elections for minority and preferred shareholder representatives. In fact, Petrobras was one of the first and most significant companies that managed to elect these representatives to its boards. Similarly to cumulative voting requests, information regarding these minority and preferred shareholder candidates is not always made available in a timely manner. And even when it is, so before vote cutoff dates, additional candidates may be presented up to and during the meeting, which ultimately prevents shareholders from making completely informed decisions about the people who are supposed to represent their very interests.
We can definitely see why foreign institutional shareholders or people who are not able to be present at the meeting would be less likely to exercise their voting rights in the past. But certainly some things have changed and will make this situation improved to an extent for 2017. So can you tell us about what is changing and what isn't changing with regard to board elections this year?
Well, up until very recently, shareholders in Brazilian issuers looking to exercise their rights only had three options available to them. The first option was to be physically present at the meetings to cast their own votes. Second option would be to vote by proxy, so have someone legally represent them with a specific power attorney. But this process entails high fees and complex bureaucratic procedures. Or the third and last option, remote electronic voting. When and if this option was made available, and only in relation to very specific proposals. Now, with this in mind, Instruction 561 was implemented aiming to make distance voting finally a reality for shareholders of Brazilian companies. For this year's upcoming annual meetings, distance voting will in fact be regulated under this instruction. Interesting fact, and according to São Paulo Stock Exchange, in 2016, six companies, including Anime Educação and Iguatemi, already chose to voluntarily give shareholders the option to use distance voting at their AGMs, where 95 ballots were received, representing around 31 million shares. So it was kind of a practice. It's also one of the most important aspects of the new instruction is that it establishes the creation of a proxy card through which shareholders can exercise their voting rights prior to meeting dates. However, the instruction also mandates that the proxy card foresee all potential variables. In other words, the proxy card must include all possible voting options for shareholders voting by proxy, even when those options aren't applicable to the meeting in question, which may obviously give rise to mix-ups on both shareholders and issuers alike.
It sounds like it could particularly lead to some confusion if, for example, there's no cumulative voting being requested at the meeting, or if there are no candidates for minority shareholders being presented. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, exactly. Since shareholders have to submit the proxy card well before the meeting date, it really can't reflect everything that is or isn't going to happen in the actual meeting.
So while some reform has certainly added clarity in terms of the available options, it seems that it's still not clear exactly what will happen at each meeting unless the information is made available well in advance. Do we expect to see a lot of companies providing information on election procedures way in advance of the meeting?
Well, since 2014, we have seen a steady increase in the disclosure of minority and preferred representative nominees, for example, and we believe that this year won't be different. In fact, the proxy card established by Instruction 561 leads us to believe that information on these candidates will be released in a timely manner by more companies than ever this year. However, and also unfortunately, the instruction seems to fall short of implementing a completely effective distance voting tool. So even though the proxy card has in fact created more and clearer voting options for shareholders voting by proxy, shareholders continue to have the right to request the adoption of cumulative voting up to 48 hours in advance of a general meeting, for example. And even though shareholders now do have the option to request cumulative voting and to cast their votes cumulatively via the proxy form, most shareholders voting by proxy will generally not meet the minimum 5% ownership threshold requirement for their vote to count. So, and this might seem a bit confusing, if the threshold for the cumulative voting procedure isn't met, then those shareholders who have voted in favor of adopting such procedure and don't have proxy representation physically present at the meeting in question, specifically mandated to use the votes cast for the multiple voting procedure towards the separate election instead, won't have their votes considered at all. This scenario may also occur with requests for separate election of minority and preferred representatives in cases where the respective ownership thresholds aren't met. Further, and unless the names of the candidates are disclosed with enough time to be included in the proxy form, cumulative voting doesn't really provide many advantages in practice to those shareholders who aren't able or who aren't planning to attend the meeting in person. So ultimately, and in our view, shareholders who are looking to be more involved and more active should have proxy representation present at meetings or alternatively attend the meetings themselves. Last but not least, we find it important to note that AMEC, the Brazilian Association of Capital Market Investors, who in the past few years has consolidated its position as one of the main driving forces for change and development within Brazilian capital markets, will be able to give further information on this deceptively simple issue.
Obviously, electing the board of directors is a very important issue to all shareholders, whether they're foreign or domestic institutional shareholders or retail. And so this is something that we will be closely following. It also sounds like there's still a high risk of shareholder votes not being counted at all, being rejected because of the various voting mechanisms that you've described, or for the election outcome to be different than what we see in the proxy based on nominees that are brought forward at the last minute. So what should shareholders do if they want to avoid the possibility of their votes being not counted or of the board being different from what they expect?
I think ultimately shareholders should either have proxy representation present at meetings or attend the meetings themselves. And actually, these different outcomes that you were just talking about impact not only the election of directors, but also different proposals at general meetings. And a good example of this is remuneration.
Right. So obviously, it will be a difficult decision for some shareholders to actually attend a meeting. So we'll hopefully see further reform of the proxy voting process in Brazil with time, but it sounds like we can at least expect some better information and better voting options for some companies this year. The other kind of big topic typically on Brazilian proxy forms is remuneration. So Eva, can you tell us how Brazilian remuneration proposals compare to other markets?
Sure. Well, unfortunately, Brazil still has a long way to go in order to standardize its remuneration practices to North American or even European levels. As you know, public companies only need to subject to shareholders' approval the amount paid to executives, board members, and supervisory council members as a whole. So while the Brazilian Securities and Exchange Commission, the CVM, mandates the disclosure in the reference form of more detailed information on the company's remuneration practices, this information is still scarce, and the details of the remuneration plans are not really questioned by shareholders present at the meeting. In this regard, the main issues of concern would be the limited transparency, the poor structures, the lack of performance-based equity awards. Let me put an example. Brazilian publicly held companies should disclose the minimum, maximum, and average remuneration for their executives and board directors. While this is not a legal requirement, the CVM strongly recommends its disclosure. However, up to around 33 publicly held companies make use of an injunction which exempts them from this obligation, alleging mostly security reasons. Funnily enough, and as Amek pointed out in a recent letter to the CVM, in order to benefit from this exemption, the executives involved must be members of the Brazilian Institute for Finance Executives of Rio de Janeiro, the IBFRJ. However, none of these companies which referred to this injunction as a reason not to disclose these amounts actually mentions the names of the executives who are members of this IBFRJ and who can therefore avail of this decision. And it doesn't seem very likely that all the executives in all of these companies are members of this IBFRJ, which makes us question if they won't be simply taking advantage of this injunction.
What's our approach when a company fails to disclose that information, Eva?
Well, we think that this information is relevant enough for us to recommend voting against all of those remuneration plans that don't disclose these amounts.
Yeah, well, it's pretty basic information, and it sounds like we don't get a lot of other information in these remuneration policies.
Exactly, because on top of that, other concerns we find with Brazilian practices is that there are still companies which do not have long-term incentive plans, and those who do have one, a great majority will only have time-based ones. What's more, about 99% of the public companies we analyze do not disclose performance targets for bonus remunerations or for long-term payments when there's a performance-based equity plan. Also, vesting periods are generally shorter since awards mostly start vesting a year after it's been granted, and a few other issues like this.
Yeah, it sounds like there's sometimes not enough information, sometimes some poor practices. What else should investors be aware of when voting on remuneration policies? Are there any tricky issues like there are with the election of directors?
Yes, it's important for investors to know that anything can happen at a Brazilian AGM. The best example for this would be what happened last year with BR Malls Participações at the last shareholders meeting, where the board proposed the approval of an aggregate amount of 42 million reais. Let's remember that this aggregate includes executive board and supervisory council remuneration. Well, this amount was rejected by approximately 60% of shareholders, and then a further 12% abstained, mainly due to the company's underperformance during the year. What happened then is that at the same AGM, a shareholder present at the meeting proposed a reduction of 7.5% in the amount of the variable part of the remuneration, and this new amount was put to vote there and then. This new amount then was approved with 97 million votes in favor and around 207 million abstentions. This implies two things. First, shareholders voting by proxy had no say at all on this new amount, and all of their votes were just counted as abstentions. And second, and as a result of this, given that it's now that it got approved by a mere 31% of the total amount of voting shares, it seems very difficult to assess if the new global remuneration really reflects the opinion of all shareholders.
Sure. So it sounds like even where shareholders are not particularly happy with the remuneration proposal, there's a risk that it could be approved in some form or fashion.
Exactly.
Well, it doesn't sound like institutional shareholders have a very strong voice at a lot of Brazilian companies when it comes to voting on things like the board and on remuneration. Are there any examples, though, of best practices emerging, signs of improvements in the market?
Well, again, AMEC is trying to push for tougher requirements when it comes to public disclosure and practices, not only in relation to remuneration, but in every aspect. Companies seem happy to stick to the bare minimum requirements. And what's more, there are companies like, for example, Banco Santander Brazil, which provides exhaustive information on its several plans, certainly more detailed and structured than any other Brazilian company, but they hold on to the IBFRJ injunction in order to not disclose individual compensations, which seems to be like a huge step back from, for example, the European Banco Santander's disclosure policies. It seems too that BR Malls, that we talked about just now, is preparing a major change in executive compensation, but we're not really expecting it to step out from Brazilian common practices. We'll just have to see what happens. So up until this moment, we haven't really been able to identify any trends indicating that Brazilian best practices are looking towards a brighter future. I guess at this point, it is up to shareholders to get tough and demand stronger regulatory requirements if we want to see a real change here.
Just in closing, can I ask what is the difference in our approach with all of these changes going on, maybe with starting with say on pay? Have we adapted our policies?
Well, since there won't be any major changes in the remuneration policies, then we are not really changing anything in our analysis. We'll definitely recommend against any policy where the executive compensation, the minimum, maximum, and average are not disclosed. And then for those that do disclose, we will still take into account the structure. We will be on the lookout for any discounted awards. We are a little bit more lenient in things like the vesting period, because that seems to be like market practice. So
that the vesting period would be lower than 3 years.
Exactly, sorry. Yeah, that it's usually awards start vesting like a year after they're granted. But there won't be any major changes from our part in our policy.
Okay. And obviously there's a lot more changes going on with the procedures for electing the board. So Fran, how will we respond to those?
Well, in terms of cumulative voting, when we do know in fact that cumulative voting has been requested and that the minimum threshold has been met, then we will recommend that shareholders vote in favor of adopting such procedure. In terms of the casting of the actual votes for individual candidates, we will recommend going forward that shareholders aggregate their votes towards what we deem to be truly independent candidates. If cumulative voting isn't requested, or when we don't know whether cumulative voting has been requested, then between a slate election and a minority or preferred shareholder representative election, so a separate election from the slate, because shareholders can only use their votes between one or the other, where the minority or the preferred shareholder representative is in fact independent, in our view, then we will recommend shareholders use their votes to try to appoint those minority and or preferred shareholder representatives to the board.
Right. Well, that pretty much wraps up our summary of our expectations for the 2017 proxy season and our approach to those issues that are changing in Brazil. If you have any further questions about the Brazilian proxy season, or if you want to find an updated copy of our 2017 Brazilian policy guidelines, you can find those on our website at www.glasslewis.com, where you can also find a contact form if you have any questions.